The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon. How to avoid swimmer's ear. Question: my brothers and sisters and I all were on a swim team for most of our young lives. The swim coach had us get out of the pool and lie on the warm pavement with one ear to the ground. We counted to 60 1 minute and then turned the other ear down. None of us ever had a bad ear. I did this with my kids, no swimmer's ears. My father-in-law, who swam every day, used an eyedropper and put a couple of drops of vodka in his ears when he climbed out of the pool. He never had a bad ear either. Answer: with the start of summer, preventing swimmer's ear is a high priority. Your approach is both free and easy with no side effects. Swimmer's ear, or otitis externa, can develop if the ears do not drain, because a damp ear may allow bacteria and fungi to thrive. At some point, this creates pain that is particularly acute when you wiggle the ear. Eardrops such as swimmer ear, containing alcohol and glycerin, can prevent infection by helping to evaporate water from the ear canal. You can also make your own eardrops. One reader reported, "I haven't had swimmer's ear for some time. I do use a home formula for drops. It's 45% alcohol, 45% vinegar, 10% glycerin. A more common formula is half alcohol and half white vinegar." Some swimmers find that customized molded earplugs can keep water out of the ears and prevent the problem. Question: I took Chantix and it helped me quit smoking. However, it had a load of side effects enough to cause me to discontinue it after 5 weeks. I suffered with nausea, insomnia, leg cramping at night, intermittent heartburn, and an unpleasant taste in my mouth. My dreams definitely were more vivid, though they weren't exactly nightmares. I would never take this stuff again, even though I am grateful that I have quit smoking. Answer: a number of people report that the stop smoking drug Chantix causes insomnia. Some individuals also have nightmares. A surprising number of medications can interfere with sleep. Some produce disturbing dreams, while others cause insomnia. Decongestants are common culprits and are found in many over-the-counter allergy medicines. You will find a list of drugs that can trigger sleeplessness in our guide to getting a good night's sleep. This online resource provides do's and don'ts for falling and staying asleep, as well as information on non-drug options and sleeping pills. It is available online at peoplespharmacy.com. Why does hiccup remedy work? Question: I've suffered with hiccups all my life. I'm in my late 50s. The only remedy that really works is one I learned from a friend about 6 years ago. Raise your left arm straight over your head while drinking a glass of water. Can you tell me why this works? I'm guessing it has to do with the stretching motion, expanding or opening up the diaphragm. Answer: hiccups are heard when the diaphragm repeatedly contracts involuntarily and the vocal cords close immediately after each contraction. There are many triggers, including a large meal, hot peppers, alcohol, carbonated beverages, and anesthesia. A number of serious health conditions can also set off hard-to-treat hiccups. That's why persistent hiccups beyond 2 days should be brought to a doctor's attention. We have been collecting hiccup remedies for over 40 years. We suspect that many work by stimulating nerves in the mouth and throat. This, in turn, might interrupt the muscular contraction. Raising the left arm while drinking water may help stimulate the vagus nerve, much as swallowing a spoonful of sugar would. This is a time-honored remedy for hiccups, and that's cited in the New England Journal of Medicine way back in December 23, 1971. Other remedies, such as sipping pickle juice or eating olives, might work by activating transient receptor potential, TRP, channels in this same pathway. You can learn about many other hiccup remedies in our book, Quick and Handy Home Remedies. Question: I found that a couple of slices of ripe papaya calms heartburn. It also provides a little fresh fruit to the diet. Papaya enzymes enzyme tablets work, but the fresh papaya is a better choice for me. Answer, a doctor first reported the benefits of papain, an enzyme from papaya fruit, for treating heartburn in the British Medical Journal on April 3rd, 1886. Sadly, there has been very little well-controlled research over the subsequent decades. As long as people are not allergic to papaya, your remedy is worth a try. Some people with latex allergy also are sensitive to papaya, mango, banana, and avocado, and that's cited in Allergy, April 1997. After intensive care, a realistic look at recovery, and this is the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. Medical issues critical enough to require time in an intensive care unit or the ICU are hard on the body and mind. In addition, aspects of ICU treatment, however necessary for survival, are physically and psychologically stressful. Time in the ICU may involve prolonged time lying in bed, using a breathing machine, a mechanical ventilator, or other invasive devices, depending on your critical illness and its complications. It may also involve multiple procedures, disrupted sleep, blood loss, difficult getting through nourishment and managing blood sugar levels, discomfort and pain, use of sedative drugs, and possibly disorientation and confusion. One important feature is the dependence on others for almost everything, including bathing, brushing teeth, and going to the bathroom. Serious complications such as organ failure, delirium, or widespread infection, sepsis, also can occur. After an ICU stay for critical illness, about half of the people will develop post-intensive care syndrome, or PICS. PICS is defined as new or worsening impairments in physical, cognitive, or mental health status arising after critical illness and persisting beyond acute care hospitalization so that recovery becomes more of a struggle. Lingering problems, PICS, can vary in severity and range from fairly mild to severe enough that you're no longer able to care for yourself independently. Signs and symptoms may include cognitive issues. These may include problems with memory, attention, concentration, communication, and your ability to reason, plan, and problem solve. Psychological conditions, anxiety, depression, or post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD symptoms, can occur. PTSD symptoms include flashbacks of either real or imagined traumatic memories that lead to distress. Finally, physical debility. General muscle weakness may cause difficulty with movement in addition to severe fatigue. Airway or swallowing problems also may occur. If you have new or worsening symptoms after an ICU stay, contact a member of your care team. Some people with PICS are unaware of a problem. Others may try to downplay or hide symptoms for various reasons, including being frightened or traumatized by the thought of additional medical care. Minimizing ICU impact. Depending on your circumstances, ICU staff may take various steps to minimize health deterioration related to the ICU. Steps may include daily breaks from sedatives and full breathing support, careful monitoring and management of delirium, and facilitating good sleep, encouraging you to move, such as by walking the halls as soon as possible, is particularly important, as it appears to be one of the better ways to reduce severity of cognitive, psychological, and physical symptoms. Family members can help by, number one, bringing comfort items such as eyeglasses, hearing aids, dentures, a robe, an easy-to-see clock, and a few familiar items such as family photos or a favorite blanket. Next, talking or interacting at appropriate times and inviting others to visit as appropriate. Third, holding hands or trying gentle massage of hands, arms, or feet. And finally, keeping a diary of the stay with information about daily events and details. Research has shown that providing an accurate record of time in the ICU can help patients reconcile inaccurate or delusional memories with factual events, which can help decrease PTSD symptoms. Going home, Various assessments can be done to diagnose PICS and determine the scope and severity of symptoms. These may be a routine part of hospital discharge or recovery care. Alternatively, evaluation may occur if symptoms emerge and are brought to the attention of a doctor. During an assessment, it's also important to look for additional problems that can mimic or worsen PICS symptoms, such as recurrent infection or sepsis, thyroid disorders, anemia, vitamin B12 deficiency, stroke, cancer, and untreated sleep disorders. There's no one-size-fits-all approach to PICS. Each component needs separate attention. Examples include anxiety, depression, and PTSD are often managed with a combination of drug therapy and counseling. Outpatient physical therapy can help with regaining strength and stamina, while occupational therapy uses tools to improve day-to-day function. Both have been shown to dramatically improve outcome and recovery. And finally, occupational therapy can help with cognitive issues. For instance, a therapist may help find ways to organize your day or keep track of things. Occupational therapy can also be help can with addressing can also be of help with addressing factors that contribute to cognitive problems, such as poor sleep or nutrition. Improvement in PICS symptoms can take months or years and require ongoing care and management. This can be very frustrating, and as a side effect, social isolation and loneliness are common. Knowing you're not alone is one step toward improvement. Joining a support group for people who are recovering from an ICU stay is one way to share your story, listen to the struggles and successes of others, and make new friends. As you feel able, make it a priority to see visitors or to get out of your home and avoid withdrawing. Good and bad fats, from the Mayo Health Letter. Cutting to the facts. When it comes to a healthy diet, fats often have a bad reputation. While certain fats play a negative role and should be minimized, some fat intake is essential to your health. What's more, there are fats that are good for you in reasonable amounts. Dietary fats supply many of the calories needed to give your body energy. Fats also help your body absorb nutrients, in particular the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K, as well as produce important hormones. Minimize these fats. There are two main types of dietary fat that increases your health risk. First are saturated fats. These come mainly from animal sources, including red meat, processed meat, and full fat dairy products. They're also found in a few plant sources such as coconut oil and palm kernel oil. Saturated fats raise low-density lipoprotein or LDL cholesterol, the bad cholesterol, as well as total cholesterol, increasing the risk of heart disease. Saturated fat may also increase the risk of type 2 diabetes. And then trans fats. Although a small amount of trans fats occurs in foods, most are made during a food processing method called partial hydrogenation. In this, hydrogen is added to vegetable oil, which causes the oil to become solid at room temperature and less likely to spoil. Trans fats increase heart disease risk by increasing unhealthy LDL cholesterol and lowering healthy HDL or high-density lipoprotein cholesterol. Choose these fats instead. Unsaturated fats tend to be better for your health, and they include monounsaturated fats. These are found in a variety of foods and oils, particularly olive oil, canola oil, nuts, and avocados. Eating foods rich in monounsaturated fats improves cholesterol, insulin levels, and blood sugar control. Polyunsaturated fats, found mostly in plant-based foods and vegetable oils. These fats improve blood cholesterol levels. They may also help decrease the rise of type 2 diabetes. One particular type of polyunsaturated fat, omega-3 fatty acids, may be especially beneficial for your heart. Omega-3s, which are found in some types of fatty fish, appear to decrease the risk of coronary artery disease. However, while monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats are the most heart healthy, they contain about the same number of calories as the less healthy fats. Eat even the healthier fats sparingly as part of a healthy diet. Excuse me. Making over your dietary fats. Some simple dietary changes can go a long way in ensuring that you're limiting bad fats and emphasizing good fats in your diet. Try these tips. Consider your overall diet. Eat a diet that emphasizes fruit and vegetables, whole grains, low-fat dairy products, poultry, fish, and nuts and seeds. Check food labels. Compare similar foods and choose the one that's lower in fat. Make sure it's also lower in calories and sodium. Limit commercially fried foods and baked goods. These foods, including donuts, cookies, crackers, muffins, pies, and cakes, tend to be high in saturated and trans fats and typically offer little nutrition. Choose low-fat dairy products or plant-based alternatives. To reduce saturated fat, choose reduced fat or fat-free milk, yogurt, sour cream, and cheese, or try milk and cheeses with a nut or soy base. Forgo frying, use low-fat cooking techniques such as grilling, broiling, baking, roasting, or steaming. Limit fried fast foods. Some commercial fats used for deep frying are still made by hydrogenation and contain saturated fat and trans fat. Opt for unhydrogenated oils. Oils such as canola, safflower, sunflower, or olive oil should be used in place of products made with hydrogenated oils when possible. Finally, trim the fat. Choose meat with the least amount of visible fat and trim most of the fat from the edges of the meat. Remove all skin from poultry. The guidelines, the 2015-2020 Dietary Guidelines for Americans offer the following recommendations about dietary fat, and there are three. Number one, avoid trans fats found in margarine and baked goods. Limit saturated fats found in sausage to less than 10% of your daily calorie intake. And finally, replace saturated fats with unsaturated fats where possible. And serving up healthy fats. A serving of fats is equal to 45 calories. Below are some examples of a serving of healthy fats. I'm going to read the food item and one serving equivalent. So avocado, 1/4 section. These are, again, equal to 45 calories. Avocado, 1/4 section. Almonds, 7 whole. Cashews, 4 whole. Peanuts, 8 whole. Walnuts, 4 halves. Canola oil, 1 teaspoon. Olive oil, 1 teaspoon. Pumpkin seeds, 1 tablespoon. And sunflower seeds, 1 tablespoon. Second opinion. I've noticed several dark spots in my vision. Is this something to be concerned about? Answer. Dark spots, such as those you describe, may be floaters. These black or gray speck strings or cobwebs typically drift about when you move your eyes and appear to dart away when you look at them directly. People who need glasses to see distance, who are nearsighted, are more likely to get floaters. They're more common in older adults as well as in people who've experienced eye trauma or inflammation inside the eye. The presence of a few floaters usually isn't a cause for concern. Most are caused by age-related changes that occur as the jelly-like substance, the vitreous, inside your eye becomes more liquid. When this happens, tiny fibers within the vitreous tend to clump and can cast tiny shadows on your retina. Although usually harmless, not all floaters are non-threatening clumps of vitreous. So it's a good idea to have any new floaters examined by an eye doctor. Contact an eye specialist immediately. If you notice a sudden increase in floaters in one eye, in particular, seek prompt attention if you also see light flashes or lose your peripheral vision. This change may signal that the retina has or is pulling away from the back of your eye, retinal detachment. Detachment occurs over about a week. A retina with a hole or tear can be successfully treated, either with laser treatment or surgery. If left untreated, full detachment can lead to vision loss in the affected eye. Question. My friends who carry extra weight worry about following a healthy diet. I've been thin my whole life. Should I worry about my diet? Answer, it's true that obesity is a risk factor for many of the problems that contribute to heart disease and stroke risk, including high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and type 2 diabetes, as well as numerous diseases, including certain cancers. However, being thin doesn't negate the need for a healthy diet. Diet influences health risks separate from body weight. Whether you're thin or not, diets that are high in saturated fat, sodium, red and processed meat, and refined carbohydrates such as the sugars and baked goods and soda can raise the risk of many health conditions. There are other important factors to consider as well, including whether you smoke or are physically active. While smokers tend to weigh less than non-smokers, their health risks are greater. Physical activity reduces health risks in people who are thin or heavy. In terms of cardiovascular health, eating saturated fat is associated with undesirable cholesterol levels, and consuming increased salt is associated with high blood pressure. A recent study found that normal weight older women who ate a less healthy diet, high calorie diet had a 10% increased risk of developing obesity-related cancers compared with normal weight women who ate a healthier diet. There are also foods that decrease health risks independent of body weight. Vegetables, fruits, whole grains, nuts, fish, and olive oil all have been associated with increased longevity and decreased health risks. They are also associated with a lower risk of heart disease and cancer. News and our views from the Mayo Health Letter. Improving your health improves atrial fibrillation. If you have atrial fibrillation, there is evidence that tackling the underlying causes can result in substantial improvement in symptoms and can positively influence long-term treatment success for most people. One common link between a number of atrial fibrillation risk factors is an association with remodeling in the structure of the heart. It appears that tackling some structure changing factors such as inactivity can reverse the remodeling that contributes to atrial fib. A study published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology looked at a group of people who had radiofrequency ablation. Part of that group participated in a doctor-directed risk management after the procedure, such as losing weight, treating the sleep disorder, obstructive sleep apnea, controlling blood pressure and cholesterol, eating a healthier diet, quitting smoking, and cutting back on or abstaining from alcohol. The others had the procedure and were only given basic information about atrial fibrillation. Among those who didn't follow the doctor-directed diet and exercise regimen, about half remained free of atrial fibrillation after 4 years. In stark contrast, 90% of people who followed the doctor-directed diet and exercise regimen remained free of atrial fibrillation at 4 years. Mayo Clinic experts say numerous studies in recent years have shed light on this area of manageable lifestyle risk factors for optimal care in atrial fibrillation that had been underappreciated. In fact, starting this year, Mayo is implementing an educational component to inform patients of the power of healthy lifestyle changes in atrial fibrillation. Most people don't have an advanced directive. An advanced directive is a valuable tool in making your personal health care decisions known, particularly in the event you're unable to express them. But a recent study found that many don't have advanced directives. This review of 150 different studies published between 2011 and 2016 was released in the July 17th issue of Health Affairs. Researchers found that just 1 in 3 people had any type of advance directive. Specifically, 29% had a completed living will and 33% had a completed health care power of attorney, which designates a representative or a proxy to make decisions on another's behalf. People 65 and older had higher completion rates than did younger adults, but the rate was still less than 50%. The highest rates, just 60%, were found in people nearing the end of life in hospice or palliative care. An advance directive will not affect the quality of health care you receive. Having directive on file allows you to decline or consent to future treatments or gives a person you trust the power to make those decisions for you. Overall, it gives you a better chance of having your wishes carried out. It can also prevent your loved ones from having to make difficult decisions. Your hospital or other health care facility may have advanced directive forms available. You also can obtain the information you need to prepare an advanced directive through organizations such as the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization. To do so, call 1-800-658-8898 or visit www.caringinfo.org/advanced directives. Don't allow arthritis to keep you from exercising. Exercising is considered the most effective pill-free treatment to cope with the pain and stiffness of arthritis. And by the way, this is from the Harvard Health Letter. And more people are getting advice from their health care providers about how to stay active, according to a study published online January 5, 2018 by the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Researchers looked at national health surveys gathered from 2002 to 2014. In that period, there was an increase in the proportion of people with arthritis, such as osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, gout, lupus, or fibromyalgia, who said their clinicians suggested physical activity to help reduce symptoms. From 52% in 2002 to about 60% in 2014. But by 2014, about 40% of arthritis sufferers still said that they weren't getting exercise counseling. That's significant considering that 91 million people ages 18 or older are affected by arthritis, according to a study published online November 27, 2017, by Arthritis and Rheumatology. You don't have to wait for a doctor to suggest exercise as an arthritis treatment. Try something gentle like walking, Tai Chi, or modified yoga. For more ideas, check out the Harvard Special Health Report, the Joint Pain Relief Workout at www.health.harvard.edu/IPRW. So, what's coming up in the future on health issues? Well, we'll be talking about the health benefits of shared living. We'll be discussing wearable weights. Do they help or do they hurt? Also, tired of your diet? Five fixes for menu fatigue. And then finally, we'll also be talking about managing medications before a medical procedure. And of course, we'll always go read the People's Pharmacy. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.